Phil Career Talk. I'm your host, Phil Perquette. This is a monthly podcast brought to you by the network where we spend an hour each month having informal discussion around career hot topics, including talent development, pillars for 2020, emotional intelligence, education, skill development, and networking with prominent leaders in our business and our community. Today, we are honored to have in our presence Angela Baskerville. Angela is Vice President of Chief Information Data Office, Corporate Systems, AT&T Services. She has over 20 years of experience in the information technology and telecommunications industry. Her technology experience spans virtually the full spectrum of information technology discipline, including development, program management, client liaison management, production support, transformation, and product development. She has managed teams comprising over 2,500 technologists and has presided over multi-year initiatives and tech portfolio budgets well into the hundreds of millions. She currently leads a team of the best and brightest technologists in the industry in delivering innovative solutions for AT&T customers worldwide. Her current mission is to transform the company's vast human capital management platform, which serves AT&T's over 200,000 employees for the next 3 years. In addition to her corporate systems responsibilities, Angela is an AT&T ambassador for the Atlanta community. She has been an executive panelist with the AT&T Leadership Development Harvard Learning Program, was a keynote speaker at the 2018 Global Women's STEM Summit, and was recognized by the Atlanta Tribune as one of Atlanta's 50 Women of Excellence. In her free time, she enjoys traveling, sports, family, time with her millennials, her children, Cameron, Kristen, and Courtney, and her bonus children. And we got to talk about that, Angela, and her bonus children, Jessica, Ariana, and Carl. Good afternoon. Welcome, Angela.
Good afternoon, Phil. Good afternoon. It's good to be with you today.
It is an honor and a privilege. Our audience will enjoy this next session where we dive in and peel back the onion and discuss these topics. Now, before we do, let's talk about it. You know, if you all know, the audience knows, I like to start off our discussion with our drink of choice as we are sitting back and relaxing in our comfortable lazy chair, couch, or desk chair. Well, you know, that's okay too. And I have my constant by my side, my dark roast, Starbucks dark roast misto with a few pumps of hazelnut and 2% milk. Angela, talk to me. What's your beverage choice as we continue our discussion?
Wow, Phil, you're going to be so disappointed. I'm sorry. This is going to be really boring, but we are in the middle of a pandemic. We should be following the advice from scientists, medical professionals, epidemiologists, and such, right? So in keeping with that, my beverage of choice, especially to start my day these days, is hot water with lemon or lime. Are you disappointed?
Okay. No, not at all. No.
It doesn't sound like it, Phil. It sounds like you're feigning not being disappointed right now.
No, I think the audience is just overwhelmed with enthusiasm with that beverage choice.
I can tell. I can tell. I'm here to please and entertain and inform and all the above.
Well, let's not keep them waiting. Let's get started. I love that choice. It's okay. I had some tea as well. Okay. You know, well, we'll leave it at that. All right. So the first topic that we're going to discuss today, as a matter of fact, we have a lot on the table that we want to get your take on. A lot of discussion points, a lot of items that were covered in previous sessions. And we really want to peel back the onion and get your and dive into your brain a little, get your thoughts. Let's start out by discussing emotional intelligence. Now, Angela, how important is having emotional intelligence in the workplace today?
Oh, it's incredibly important. Ironically, what's most important about it is the fact that it is an often overlooked need in the arsenal of leadership or management, or even, you know, just an individual contributor in the workplace. So I'm delighted, first of all, that it's a part of the discussion and starting out the discussion, because it's incredibly important. Everything we do, particularly our company, AT&T, it's about connectivity. And connectivity is simply about people. Who are we and what are we trying to connect? We're trying to connect people to either entertainment or other friends and family members, or their, again, their entertainment of choice, or definitely in this case, in our current climate, to work. And connectivity is all about human capital. So having a high degree of emotional intelligence means that you have some self-awareness yourself about your emotions and what drives you. But most importantly, you are intuitive about what I call reading the room. And reading the room allows you to be intuitive about what's driving either the project team that you're working as a part of, the team that you have responsibility to lead, even hierarchically speaking, what drives your leadership team. And having an ability to understand the emotional undercurrent that drives a particular form or dynamic is incredibly important, because without that, you're left with just data. And data informs and is incredibly important. Data does inform, and I don't mean to minimize it, but culture impacts, and emotional intelligence has everything to do with driving culture.
I love that. Culture impacts. So do me a favor, talk to me more about what does that mean, reading the room? Could you dive into that a little bit more?
Yes, it is understanding your audience, right? It's one of the principles of marketing, which I won't get too far into because I'm a technologist and it won't take long to deplete my knowledge of marketing. But reading the room means that you have a good understanding of the dynamics at play for the particular forum that you're in. If you are in the middle of presenting to a project team, what are those dynamics that are at play, meaning what's going on socially, what's going on from a resource perspective? Is the project team already spent in that they don't have enough people to perform, meaning that they're going to be distracted from just the deliverable itself? What's at play? Take the time to understand whatever audience or whatever forum that is. What are those intangible dynamics at play that can be a distraction from ultimately what the deliverable is?
And so talk to me then, seeing the benefit, I love the statement, and I think that's a hashtag, culture impacts, right? Talking about connectivity, talking about service, being able to read the room, all very important, looking at the dynamics. So what's the consequence of not being able to exhibit emotional intelligence?
Yeah, great question. We talk about it when we do about what's good about it, but we don't talk about what's at risk. And what I would submit is inherent to most of our jobs is a fair degree of risk management. What happens if that sunny day scenario that we all hope and pray for does not happen? What goes awry? So we should all be doing risk management about whatever our goal or deliverable is. meaning do we mitigate the risk? Do we avoid the risk? Do we manage the risk? And what happens when we don't manage? So if we're only looking clinically at an outcome, you know, we're being one dimensional and we're saying it's these metrics that we've been given and we're trying to drive to this outcome. And we look at it very clinically, again, back to the data informing versus the culture impacting. We can get all the way down the road to being close to the deliverable and realize that managing those intangible dynamics that I mentioned were completely overlooked and it derails your deliverable. When you don't consider that maybe the team wasn't on the same page, maybe there was a morale issue, maybe there was silent competition, maybe there was a dynamic of heroics, meaning that instead of managing the deliverable well, there are dynamics on the team that says the hero who saves it at the end of the day gets all the credit. And maybe the rest of the team is not okay with that. So that really is the risk. It's not doing proper risk management, which is what emotional intelligence allows you to do with reading the room. And the risk of that is derailing whatever your deliverable was. And you often find that out much too late in the game.
When you're talking about, you just said a mouthful there. When you're talking about like silent competition, that reminds me of what are people's intentions. And Covey talks about it. He says often, people don't question really what you say, the words you use, but your intentions behind what you're doing and your actions that you're taking. So I want you to, this is just normal, you know, what is it? Face-to-face, person-to-person. Now I add leadership into the mix. Have you ever had to coach someone who lacked emotional intelligence? Maybe were not self-aware. How did you go about, handling that dynamic?
I've definitely had to coach from that perspective. And it is usually about, particularly in technology spaces, and I can say this as a technologist without it coming across disparagingly because I am a technologist. But again, we focus a lot on data and metrics in the space. And when you do that and you have a myopic or single dimensioned view, my coaching is around, let's again look at what we've been tasked to do. And if we only look at this clinically, you're going to be derailed in terms of what you expect the outcome to be. We don't have the benefit of only looking at it through the lens of this one factor, because our responsibility gives us responsibility over the entire outcome. And the entire outcome isn't managed by one factor. So what I'm going to need you to do, which would be my approach, is to make a list of other factors that could potentially derail what your results should be. You rarely have a problem getting people to understand what the results should look like. Everyone wants to know what their responsibility is in creating the optimal goal or the result. So what you normally have to do is start from there and say, do we all agree that this is the result, the common goal? Let's back up a little bit and say, and list the factors that potentially derail. And when you get them to list the factors that potentially derail the common goal, they will often gravitate toward the data, the metrics, the KPIs. And then you force those factors that are less intangible and less obvious, like I've mentioned earlier, team dynamics. Can you list that as an option? What do you mean by team dynamics? What's at play that can derail? So a little ironic that I'm suggesting a clinical approach to coach someone around emotional intelligence, but that is absolutely what I've used in the past, because you have to meet people where they are. And if where they are, what resonates with them is approaching something clinically, then you can actually help them understand emotional intelligence by a clinical activity.
So Let's talk. Let's switch gears. This is a great start talking about emotional intelligence. I want to shift in another topic that we've been discussing all year is education and skill development. Mm-hmm. So do you think that a degree is enough to be successful? Can I be a player in today's market with a degree?
Absolutely not. That is not, mm-hmm. that is the beginning, and that is table stakes. And I will even pin that being table stakes because certain companies have already decided to be a little more progressive in that aspect and not even require a degree. They are looking mm-hmm. for experience. They are looking for proficiency, competence, and proven ability in a certain space. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, not all companies have shifted from that. So let's just start from the premise of how you presented the question, which is, does it require only a degree? And it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Your degree gives you a leg up from a perspective of theory and again, mm-hmm. learning disciplines. But the notion of applying that and moving from being a theorist to a practitioner is equally, if I would not dare to say, more important. And the reason I say that is always going to be from the perspective, I can't help but have it be from this perspective through my lens, is because mm-hmm. technology undergirds everything we do today.
Yes,
having
it does.
Nothing to do with whether or not you are a technologist. Technology runs the world right now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is very pervasive with technology is obsolescence. So mm-hmm. not only can an application or technology be obsolete, but so can your skills. So depending on, you know, depending solely on your degree, because your mm-hmm. degree ends at a certain point, right? We graduate, we get the diploma, and we learned what was relevant at the time that we were going through a certain curriculum. And then mm-hmm. the very next day, that skill set depreciates because mm-hmm. we are living in an information age that, again, means obsolescence is so pervasive. So if you are mm-hmm. not continuing to retool and reskill and remain mm-hmm. relevant, the less dependent you can be on your degree. It's always going to be foundational to you. I submit that even getting a technology degree teaches you how to think analytically, you know, almost yes. like a computer. Mm-hmm. But adding to that, what's going on in the marketplace and remaining relevant and retooling and reskilling as the technology changes or the mm-hmm. market demands. Let's take it away from technology for those who may be already sick of me using that word. Let's just talk okay. about consumer trends, you okay. know, market trends. What's needed today just in terms of how the climate has changed. I will guarantee you that what has become pervasive as a need for a consumer in November, December of 2020 compared to February mm-hmm. is dramatically different. So mm-hmm. another reason why you have to reskill and retool because markets change and needs change and consumer needs change.
Mm-hmm. So you've been talking about, you know, technology, going back to technology, Angela, you say it undergirds everything. Yes, it does. You and most leaders in the business are looking for the education side of it. They also are looking for, as you stated, experience, table stakes, proven ability, competency, critical thinking. How should one go about retooling, staying relevant, not getting, obsolete in my skill sets, especially with technology changing so rapidly? How do I go about it? How we heard Dr. Opie say at the beginning of the year, hey, you know, take a step back and think about this for a moment. Yeah, you should, but, you know, you need to weigh out priorities and so forth. How do I stay relevant and also look at it from a priority standpoint, if that makes sense mm-hmm. to you?
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. And there are two ways from my perspective that I can consider best practices. One, inside of your company, follow the growth ball. Most companies have a vision around what the priorities are and what they consider declining business versus growth. We absolutely do right now at AT&T because we're in the middle of the business phase referred to as transformation. So we have, I have such appreciation for our senior leadership team that has simplified what our priorities are regarding 5G and broadband expansion and HBO Max. Those, the gauntlet has been thrown down and those are the growth balls for us. One, follow that. Two, outside of just a corporate perspective, follow emerging trends, follow emerging technology trends, and follow emerging consumer and business trends. Let's start with technology trends. Whether you're in technology or not, understand cloud. You don't have to be a technologist to understand that there are efficiencies, savings, cost savings related to putting applications in the cloud. That does not have to be tech-ese talk. Understand that and how that impacts a consumer. If you're just a regular iPhone user, you know your photos are in the cloud. Yep. You don't understand the technology behind that, but you know at some point it shifted from you having to carry around a memory cord to they say it's somewhere in something called the cloud now. So understand AI and machine learning to the point of being able to be conversant about it. Okay. Not necessarily you don't have to get your PhD in it. You don't have to get your PhD in marketing data analytics, but you should understand that it is a trend and how it impacts your current domain. So again, know the growth ball of your current company and follow emerging and consumer and technology trends.
Is there one course that you think should definitely be in each of the network skills development programs learning path, being business, leadership, and technical? You say follow the growth ball. I love that term. Is there one course that you would definitely recommend for the program?
Well, interestingly, it would appear to be a bit of a deviation from what I've mentioned earlier, because in each of those domains, business, leadership, and technical, I think in each of those domains, there is something that brings it together at an intersection point, and that is cultural competence.
Okay.
I think, again, much like emotional intelligence, is often overlooked, but the importance of it and your ability to weave it into that emerging trends is incredibly important. You need to know culturally what drives business trends. You need to know culturally what, as a leader in the leadership domain, what drives your team to for motivation and creating an optimal work environment. And technically, you need to understand the cultural trends that are impacting technology. And I say that definitely from the perspective of what our current social climate is, and also because I find that what we focus on the most are those domains: business, leadership, technical. And that is what we expect to become really proficient at in our arsenal. But what has been missing all of this time from my perspective is having social and cultural awareness about what drives those three things. So I would suggest that that is what we add to those domains.
So we've talked about understanding education skill development. We talked about the significance of emotional intelligence. I want to shift gears to networking, another key area in 2020. Now, with COVID, what do you think, what place do you actually think traditional networking holds? I'm very interested in your perspective, especially understanding some of the points that you've made earlier. What about networking to you? How significant is it from a traditional perspective to today?
Networking becomes more important as you traverse what I call the seasons of your career. In the beginning, the most important factor about establishing yourself as credible and managing your reputation in the corporate environment is your work product. Mm-hmm. It is where you are showing a certain level of depth with competence, proficiency, subject matter expertise. That mm-hmm. is what gets you on the, what I call the visibility wheel. It is not running around and networking with everybody in the office. Because just like, you know, I shall use the analogy of you're not being able to exercise your way out of a bad diet. You cannot network your way out of a mediocre work product. So
okay,
don't get the sequence mixed up first. So let's start with establishing yourself as credible with what you do. That means that that positions you for the next season of your career trajectory, from my perspective, which is about networking, which mm-hmm. is about ensuring that you establish networks, right? You may have a network of people that you talk with around your discipline. You may have a network of people that you speak with around career trajectory. Women may have a network of other women who help them understand this notion, sometimes this myth, of work-life balance. So mm-hmm. you can have different areas of networking, and it does help with your visibility, which is normally critical, probably in any corporate culture. But the other mm-hmm. thing that's often forgotten about networking is that it's two ways. You should be offering yes. the currency, right, of what you can provide, mm-hmm. as well as what your expectations are back. So because mm-hmm. no man is an island, it does become important. Networking does. But I often coach people around not over-indexing on that, because you don't want to be viewed as the person who wants to spend all of their time building networks, but not building your work product. Because at the mm-hmm. end of the day, you need that credibility. So I would call it moderately important, depending on where you are in your career trajectory or season.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in, you used the phrase seasons of your career.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the first time I've heard that. I'm interested in your, I want you to elaborate on that for the audience. I want to make sure okay. everyone's clear where you're going with that. You've been saying, you've been dropping some nuggets to me, Angela, your cultural, you know, some of the things you said, culture impact, silent competition. I wish I had more time to go into that silent competition, but let's talk more about this seasons of your career. Share with the audience what you mean by that.
Yeah. So I'll, just to reiterate, what I said earlier about, you can sometimes get really distracted about what you should be focused on as you're starting your career, because you've mm-hmm. heard all of these leadership principles. You've heard all of the things you should be focused on and the factors that, you know, help supposedly ensure success. And you mm-hmm. want to start doing all of those at once as you start your career. But again, in the beginning, and I'm only going to talk about numbers here just for illustrative purposes, because you can't generalize the seasons of someone's career. Someone may take 5 years to do something that someone else takes one. But let's say the first 3 years of your career is ensuring that everyone understands that if you're looking for someone who understands data analytics in this current product group, that's mm-hmm. me. That is me. Look no further. Mm-hmm. I know everything about it. I'm not really looking to, you know, develop my weaknesses. I'm looking to exploit that thing that I'm already good at. So I'm mm-hmm. looking to go from good to great about data analytics. And everyone's mm-hmm. going to know that I'm great at it. 3 years pass, and then you realize this took me only so far, right? Everybody knows I'm really good at it. And every time that role comes up, they expect me to do it. But I am now looking to progress myself. I need to start networking. I need to start letting people know outside of my bubble and my organic domain that I work in every day that I do happen to be good at this. I need to start offering these services outside of just my client group. Do other people have a need for data analytics? And we can barter, because then they get to know my product. I get to know theirs. We develop trust, and that gives me visibility. After network, after the season of networking, then it is about relationship building. And that is different from networking, because relationship building has the foundation of trust. That means you know me, you know my work product, you know my work character, you know my work ethic. It'll lead to probably some other discussions we'll have around mentoring and sponsorship and such. But those are the seasons. This is why people often get frustrated about the fact that I'm really, really good at something, but it is a not, it's not allowing me to be progressed or promoted. I've reached a ceiling in a very short amount of time. And that's because you now need to shift from just competence to visibility and networking and relationship building and bartering. Does that make sense? Those are the seasons.
It makes total sense. Now you're getting into understanding the significance of networking, understanding the significance you brought in, building relationships is about, it does bring into other variables such as trust and how do I balance that? Because I'm coming to a meeting. I'm coming to a meeting. I do want to network, but I also don't want to, your point you made earlier, and I've heard this earlier in one of the other sessions, as you know, you're the vice president. I want to come in. I want to meet you. I don't want to come across as someone that's not here to help you. I'm just out for myself. How do I, how do I, you know, balancing that? And then I might want to build a relationship. I don't know. So that newbie that's in there that's getting started with networking, and there are all these variables and all these nuances that I got to keep in mind. How do I balance that? I do want to network, but I also want to make sure that I'm not stepping on toes coming across where I do want to get somewhere, but I don't want you to think that I'm only trying to get there without helping you.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
And it absolutely does. And that I'm the person in the room that is only motivated by personal agenda, right? That is, that's very off-putting. And you don't want to be known as that person. I think about the book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. That's one of the dysfunctions, right? That personal, that person that always has a personal agenda. And what's interesting about that person is everybody knows it, but the person doesn't realize everybody knows that about him or her. So that's that puts them in a worse position, right?
Right.
Not only have you been outed, but you don't even know.
Right. I have no clue that I don't know. Yeah, that's
exactly right. That's exactly right. So I would say lead with what I call the interest versus fascination model. And that means that whomever it is that you're trying to develop a relationship with, find out what interests them and make sure that it fascinates you. So if I am trying to build a relationship with that VP, or at least network with them, right? Let's not skip to relationship before we just establish who we are and start networking with them. Find out what that group or person's goals are, or what the current struggles are, the business goals that they're struggling with. We all have them, right? And offer that. Is there some way we can, I understand that you guys are currently looking at which applications should be put in the cloud. And I'd like to give you a perspective on that that is more consumer related. I know I'm not a technologist, but from a product perspective, the reason that we would be putting apps in clouds is for cost savings and efficiency. And I'd like to give you some feedback on what that would mean to the consumer. And maybe we can talk about building on that and potentially collaborating. Does that sound like that would be of interest to me versus, hey, I saw you speaking on a panel yesterday and I'd like to get some mentoring time. Which one of those do you feel like that person would be more apt to have resonate with them and to take you up on an offer to meet?
Sounds like you're telling me I got to do some homework. So it's a good thing that we've been talking about understanding the significance, Angela, of networking, understanding also the importance of building relationships, but they are not one of the same, made of the same cloth. There's different priorities. There's different focuses and outcomes that you're looking for from each one of those areas. I want to shift now to 2021. And one of the things that we're looking at is adaptability. Now, we've been discussing understanding cultural, influences, understanding the impact that culture has, understanding to read the room. We've been talking about knowing data and metrics. We've been discussing education and development and not becoming stagnant, and because being obsolete will be a consequence. So now, with all of that said, from the word adaptability, let's talk about how adaptability is important. And we already know from a career perspective, let's talk about it in other areas of the business, like, for instance, in focus and results. Talk to the audience about the significance of adaptability.
It is critically important because in this current climate, there is nothing more consistent than change. So your inability to adapt is honestly what I would consider a fatal flaw. And I don't use that term lightly, and I don't use it often because most things can be mitigated. But again, in the current business, corporate, and even just global climate or social climate, your ability to adapt is just critically important. It will leave you stagnant and viewed as not having one of the key tools in your arsenal when we think about this notion of visibility and progression and promotion. There is an entire psychology discipline and book written around the notion of the growth versus fixed mindset. Entire psychology. And all of that is really about a person's ability to be adaptable. Their ability to be adaptable and all that it either leads to from a success perspective or limits you from if not embraced. So yes, incredibly, incredibly important.
So Angela, I want to stay there for a moment. Now, we've been in business a long time. You've been in the business industry. You have over 20 years in your area of expertise in your history. So I have 30 years, but we've been hearing that all the time. Adaptability, yes. Being able to adapt. Yes. So talk to me about, and young folks hear that and they probably have curriculum on it in school and so forth. But now I'm a seasoned. I'm a veteran in the workplace. And I've been here in right. Yes, that's good. Tenure. But, and I've been hearing you gotta adapt. Talk to me about adaptability for that individual in our audience. We know. But I've been hearing that for eons.
Right.
So talk to me about what would you say to that person who's like, whatever.
Yeah, I've heard that enough. It's trite at this point, right? It's overused. I hear it. It's a good parameter to throw around. But what does that really mean? And why would it be a fatal flaw? It has always been important, but back to the need to be relevant today and keep yourself reskilled and retooled, it has never been more important. And let me tell you why that's not trite. All you have to do, again, is look at how trends from products consumers, marketing, advertising, supply chain, HR. I'm going to name all of the business units that make up a traditional company, and I am going to leave out the dreaded T word that I've overused here today. But those are trending at clips equal to the dreaded T word. Mm-hmm. And if you are not showing yourself proficient in the ability to manage through that level of change, then you're going to be left behind. It really is that simple. One of the things that businesses are looking to do today is to do everything faster and everything faster and with less, because that equates to improving their bottom line. So this isn't mythical. This isn't a cute little leadership PowerPoint presentation when we say this. It is really, if you look at the bigger landscape of what businesses are having to do, corporations are having to do to stay in the game and create shareholder value, it is more with less. What more with less usually means is a changing landscape, a changing environment, a changing approach to how you get your work done, how you get that deliverable accomplished. There's probably much more automation built into your job than it used to be. Do you know how to use those tools? Do you know the principles of agile methodology that most companies are adopting so that they can decrease the product cycle and get things to market sooner? If you get things to market sooner, what does that mean? You can create revenue sooner. So it's not myth. In addition to those skills we talked about earlier, that is about keeping yourself reskilled and retooled, it is your ability to adapt to changing environments, changing cycles, and changing dynamics. Anytime you are at risk of getting stuck in the mud, you are at risk of getting run over. And if you're okay with that, right? Let's say you just, listen, I want to rest on my laurels. I'm really not trying to stay in the game like that. I am not trying to future-proof myself. I'm sick of change. Then rest. Go ahead and rest and count the cost. And you may really be at a season in your career that might sound a little dismissive, but maybe you have reached that season in your career where you're thinking, it's just enough to keep up with and say grace over that which is before me, right? If you make that, it's fine to make that decision, but make that decision with the data that informs you about what the risk of that is.
I have one more question on this. Now, I'm going to throw a different, I'm going to throw a different variable here, a different turn. It isn't that I want to be stagnant. But to your point of, I'm good. I'm good. I love what I do.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how about that individual that says, I'm not looking to get promoted. I'm not looking to go anywhere else. I just want to stay where I am.
Mm-hmm. That's incredibly important, because that's that self-reflection that you do about those seasons that I referred to earlier of your career. Yes. And if the season in which you're currently in is, I love what I'm doing. This is utopia that I've always looked for. And I'm really not looking to do anything different right now. To your point, I'm not saying I've taken myself off the radar or out of the game and I want to be viewed as stagnant, but this is cool. I'm okay. I'm good. I'm good. That is absolutely fine. But have that discussion with yourself, right? And don't go there inadvertently. Be intentional even about that season. My point about that is, don't let someone else put you there. Sometimes I talk about drunk drivers, right? As long as you got in that lane because that's where you want to be and not because a drunk driver of someone with projection or limited exposure or making assumptions about you, put you there, mm-hmm. then that is perfectly fine if you made that decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then be the best person in that lane.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And make sure you chose the lane, not that it was chosen right. for you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Sit in it. Excellent point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm loving this discussion. Angela, let's shift gears and talk about mentoring, advocacy, mm-hmm. and sponsorship.
Okay.
So your view, your perspective, your thoughts on the differences between those three terms, mentoring, advocacy, and sponsorship.
Okay, let's talk about those. And I'm going to talk about them out of that order because I consider it a bit of a continuum. Okay.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'll talk about it in the order of mentoring, sponsorship, and advocacy. And this isn't okay. gospel. It's just my take on it. Okay. It's not doctrine. Mm-hmm.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. But mentoring is advice from my perspective. And you can have okay. several mentors because there could be someone that you hold in high regard in terms of how they approach their job. There could be someone else that you hold in high regard because of their community engagement and their the mm-hmm. extracurriculars that they lend themselves to outside of their job. It could be mm-hmm. someone who has just shown a certain level of proficiency that caught your attention. And you want to seek advice from them. And it needs mm-hmm. to be specific, right? Not, mm-hmm. I want time on your calendar and we're just going to open the conversation up and you should just start talking to me. What do mm-hmm. you need from a mentor? Make it clear mm-hmm. for them. They are not bakers. They should not be starting from scratch. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Mm-hmm. Number two mm-hmm. is sponsorship. Sponsorship is someone that knows your work product. Okay. A mentor mm. doesn't necessarily know your work product. That could be the very first time you've ever spoken to that person. Okay. Mm. They can't sponsor you because they don't know your product. Sponsorship means that someone knows enough of your work product and your area of proficiency. So much so that they are willing to sponsor you or to speak highly of you behind closed doors and say, I don't just like this person. We didn't just have a mentorship, a mentee-mentor relationship. They have worked for me. They have worked alongside mm-hmm. me. I know the work mm-hmm. product and I can vouch for it. That's mm-hmm. sponsorship. Okay. Highest mm-hmm. level of the continuum is advocacy. Advocacy assumes that a person knows your work product. Okay. Mm-hmm. They do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just someone where you had advice type conversation with. They know your work product. And not only are they sponsoring you and speaking highly of being able to vouch for that product, they are beating the table in the room for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they mm-hmm. are saying, no, not your Joe, but my Ashley. And I'm advocating for this person because I know their work product. I've seen them in different situations. And not only am I sponsoring them, I am an advocate for them getting mm-hmm. that assignment, that role, that promotion. It's different when you sponsor someone versus advocating. And the best way for mm-hmm. me to describe that always is you are willing to pound the table for them.
Mm-hmm. So would you say it's sponsorship on steroids?
Yes. I love that analogy.
You like
right.
that?
We have turned it up a bit.
they're on steroids for you. I love that. Now, when you think about mentoring and advocacy and sponsorship, more importantly now, that's needed than ever before, because sometimes it's not who you know. You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. But mm-hmm. they sometimes they got to fight for you when you're not in the room. They got to fight
That's
for you,
right.
fight for your skills, fight for your integrity, fight for your competence level.
Absolutely.
And that's an awesome thing. So I love that. So what would you tell that person? We've been talking about skills, skill development. And I want to finish this up with continuous learning. Is there any final thoughts that you have Because just like before, we talked about adaptability. Any final thoughts about continuous learning that you want to leave with the audience? And then we have one more question before we wrap up.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would just reiterate to stay abreast, right? It's just not the time or the season, even if you have to happen to be that person that we just talked about, right? Look, I'm good. Mm-hmm. The I'm good person, mm-hmm. which there's nothing wrong with that. Even if you're mm-hmm. the I'm good person, there is something to be said about you remaining good. Okay.
Yes.
If that's where you want to hang out, cool. Mm-hmm. I'm good with that. But you have to remain good. And even if you happen to be in that spot, there is still that other dynamic we talked about change and adaptability and the dynamics yes. around you changing. So if mm-hmm. you're good in that seat, that's fine. But keep your eyes and ears on what's happening around you while you sit in that seat, because there is something mm-hmm. always happening around you, right? So continuous mm-hmm. learning is about you being abreast about what's changing that you don't have control over. Yes. We normally know those things that are changing that we are controlling, right? Because we're putting mm-hmm. the finger to keyboard or hand to plow to change it. But we need to be savvy about those dynamics and parameters that are changing around us. Your company is in a transformation phase. Why?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are mm-hmm. the tentacles associated with that? What are the pillars? Mm-hmm. What are the priorities? So be aware, be savvy. There's a cost to this. Let me put this in perspective. There is a mm-hmm. cost to this. Because it takes discretionary time to be savvy and observant. And you always have a choice of how you use your discretionary time. You can play video games. You can Netflix and chill. You can hang with the girls. You can hang with the boys. You can watch the Atlanta Falcons lose.
Just Bears lose.
Glock. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or you can take some of that because mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent in a part of being a corporate athlete is downtime, right? And recovery time. So I'm not selling that grind 24 hours a day myth, okay, at all. Mm-hmm. But what I'm telling you is that you're going to have to take a percentage of your discretionary time and apply it to being aware, abreast, conversant in, and do research in your domain. Mm-hmm. That's how you stay relevant. That's how you stay mm-hmm. on top of your game. You're going to have to avail yourself to information that you have to pull versus that gets mm-hmm. nicely pushed to you. Mm-hmm. That's LinkedIn, that's social media. That's, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and we are actually without excuse for doing that today because it's at mm-hmm. our fingers. It's just, mm-hmm. it's choosing to do it, feeling, you know, and having the bandwidth to do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I appreciate the way you said that. You know, I thought you were about to talk to me about I thought you were watching me watch Netflix and play my video games.
I wasn't going to bring it up, Phil.
And then she was talking about my football. I'm like, really? Come on now, Angela. Don't talk about me that bad. All right. So,
you know,
it sounds like personal development. You have to find the personal development that we talked about in the Extraordinary Leadership Model, talking about character, talking about change and focus, talking about interpersonal skill development, and then personal development. You have to find that moment in time. I agree with you on that. Final question that I have for you, and it's really been powerful. It has been powerful, Angela, and I want you to know that I believe our audience is benefiting. I want to set this up. Okay, here we are. We see this tumultuous time that we are in. We see all of this going on a personal level, what we're seeing out in social media, what we're seeing in the news, what we're seeing in politics and so forth. 2021 is right around the corner. Here we are coming in, you know, let's just go on wings of imagination. It's January. And here I want to start out strong, in the year 2021. And I want to build that lasting relationship in business. How do I go about it?
You start with the currency of trying to create a foundation of trust. And mm-hmm. one of the ways that you do that is, we talked about this earlier as well, lead with intent and the intention behind why you're doing this. And the human condition is that people are looking for what you are bringing to the table. And the more mm-hmm. they see that you're genuine about wanting to offer something up, the more intentional they will be about their side of the equation that they own and manage, which is reciprocating. So the way you take a relationship from one of networking to relationship is to, again, ensure that there is something on the menu that you are freely offering to the other person, mm-hmm. that they can see a benefit in establishing relationship. Now, you might say, well, that sounds very personal agenda-ish to me as well, Angela. Mm-hmm. You just ask us to stay away from that. It is the human condition. People often don't even realize that when an opportunity is being presented to them to develop a relationship, they are unconsciously looking for what's in it for them. That does not mean that they are selfish. That does not mean that they have personal agenda. It means that time is a commodity that you cannot get mm-hmm. back. And they are looking for, if I expend time here, how does that mm-hmm. benefit me in other ways where I potentially don't have to spend as much time? And it's mm-hmm. just inherent. It's a human condition. So lead with your offering the currency of, like, bartering. Right. Mm-hmm. So don't mm-hmm. just make it about, I'm coming to get what I can get from you. And it's what I say about most relationships or most situations. Don't be the taker. Don't be the taker in the room, because mm-hmm. taking does not, there are a lot of different words for it. Right. Some of us call it karma. Some of us call it the universe giving back. Some of us call it reaping and sowing. But mm-hmm. taking does not produce harvest. It mm-hmm. just doesn't in any situation. Mm-hmm. So being only a taker in the relationship is not going to produce a harvest for you of cultivating a relationship. So lead with mm-hmm. giving. Lead with mm-hmm. giving is what I would strongly recommend.
So some of us call it selfish.
Some of us do.
And not selfless. Excellent. Excellent, Angela. It's what a wonderful time that we've had, just, you know, diving in and discussing these important topics in business. And I appreciate your transparency and your, forthcoming with information that leads into the personal side. Here you have the audience. You have the network audience in front of you. We're at the end of 2020. It's been an up and down year. What are the final words that you would love to leave with the network audience?
I really, really want everyone to take care of themselves. That again is going to sound trite, and that again is going to sound not as cerebral or intellectual as you might expect on a career development podcast. But we mm-hmm. 2020 has taught us that if you don't first lead with the oxygen mask over you mm-hmm. first, that you are not equipped to lead, develop products, resolve business issues, everything else that we've talked about, have emotional intelligence, build business acumen, develop technology savvy, increase your leadership mm-hmm. arsenal. Take care of yourself first. I have had a few sessions with people in certain communities that have been more impacted by our social climate than others about mm-hmm. what I call wellness checks. Just wellness checks. Take a minute to figure out how you're coping. Are you really, mm-hmm. or are you just compartmentalizing and moving on? It's hard mm-hmm. not to hear about what's going on around us on your business call. So don't expect that to be the forum by which you get refueled and refilled. Mm-hmm. Be intentional about creating it in your own space. And that's going to fill you up in a manner that allows you to lead and develop your skills and use that discretionary time. All those things that we've talked about. So what I would say to this audience is what you can do for me is to take care of yourselves well and be intentional about that. And that is going to be everything that you, because if you're not well in every dimension of you, you're not going to be able to traverse your career plans and your career ladder. So let 2020 have not been for naught with us and teach us that.
Awesome words from an awesome leader, an awesome woman. I appreciate you, Angela. It has been powerful. I believe the audience is going to enjoy this session tremendously. And I want to thank you. I thank everyone. We'll see you next time at the next Real Career Talk session.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.